Right now, it is time to bring in David Tarachuk. It's time for The Media Beat. David, of course, has his own website, themediabeat.us. He's also a Huffington Post and also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And we say good morning, and we hope David's in a warm, comfy place. Good morning, David.
Good morning. I'm glad to be back with you. I'm glad to be back in the country. Though, as Jill was asking me earlier, why would I come back from the warmth of Puerto Rico, where I was enjoying myself a lot? I was very cozily warm, and crashing waves, which were not so cold themselves either. But I came back to the polar vortex. One reason is that I had to be in my own hometown for my own hometown's newspaper. Huge, exclusive that they plastered the front page of the paper with today. And, of course, the website, an exclusive interview with the President of the United States. But I'm afraid it's something of a damp squib, something of a letdown. I mean, no other newspaper or media organization has followed the New York Times' exclusive interview very closely, in the mainly because it's hardly in the nature of an exclusive. The president is to be found just about everywhere. He gives a remarkable number of interviews, many of them called exclusive for some silly old historical reason in the minds of newspaper publishers. And this one, of course, was organized by the New York Times' publisher, Sulzberger. Arthur Sulzberger was actually taking the lead in asking many of the questions, not the normal role of a publisher. But there was two other very experienced Times journalists who know the president rather well in the White House and outside of it. It was an interesting interview, but it certainly wasn't world-shaking and certainly didn't warrant all the New York Times fuss about it.
Yeah, basically all he did was say things that he said outside of the New York Times. I mean, he just repeated it. Nothing different, nothing earth-shaking. It was, you know, it's what you expect. How can I say it? The consistency of inconsistency.
Yeah, the inconsistencies were sort of ran down by the Times and other newspapers that have obviously felt obliged to at least follow up in the form of fact-checking what the man said. And sometimes what he, you know, omitted to say, and sometimes what he said contradicting what he said in another context. I mean, that is the job of newspapers to do that. Journalists in all media need to do that all the time. But yeah, there was very little that was new. There was once almost endearing, almost endearing touch when there was something rather specific to Trump. And I've not heard him actually say this before, when he actually put in a plea to the Times as a hometown newspaper. I think of it as my hometown newspaper too. I don't blame him for that. He said at one point, "I come from Jamaica, Queens, Jamaica Estates, and I became president of the United States," Mr. Trump said. "I'm sort of entitled to a great story, just one from my newspaper."
Unbelievable.
I wonder if he thinks of my newspaper in the sense that he would say my house, or does he think he owns it, perhaps? I don't know.
I mean, to be honest with you, with all the press that he got before he was president, and all this stuff was mentioned, he seems to forget that he dominated solely from the time he announced till he got the nomination. He dominated the news cycle over everybody, newspapers, magazines, TV, radio, all went gaga over him because they thought they were following a carnival act that wouldn't amount to anything, and they were very surprised when it all ended.
Absolutely. And the carnival act is of such attraction to media these days, who are, you know, infected by the notion spread out from all sorts of supposedly innovative bits of television, like reality, so-called reality television, an area that he found himself in, too. And of course, that spreads a kind of competitive herd-like urge to cover the carnival and cover it like a carnival. And of course, you know, it had its effect. I'm not sure that the media won the election for Trump, but they were certainly not at their best and finest and most inquisitive and questioning through that whole campaign. And we did end up with what we ended up with.
You know, the carnival has now become reality. And when you sit here and look back, the economy. For big corporations and for very wealthy people right now, the economy is going extremely well. And for some middle class people that do have money in the stock market, the economy is going fairly well. But then that's the end of the positives. You look, we are in a much more dangerous place than we have been in a long time. We now have a poor relationship once again with Iran by pulling out on that deal. So that makes that unstable. Look what's happening in Venezuela, where now, once again, we're involved in a very poor situation there. North Korea is a sad sham and a joke. We keep having these meetings, and nothing really is happening there. They've got their nukes, and they're going to keep their nukes. Take a look at our relationships with our European allies. That is not good at all. And then you had the shutdown here in the United States. I mean, if Barack Obama were president and all that were happening, and we had the Republican Congress and the Republican House, there would be nothing but things going up and fireworks going up. And it's not that way. People don't understand. The president does not. He's an isolationist, and he just doesn't know how to work in big government. I think that's his problem.
Oh, any form of government. I think this is what happens when you put people in charge of government who don't believe in government. But there is one, you alluded to it yourself a little earlier, there is one consistency to his glaring inconsistencies. In that recitation that you just gave of all the things that are going wrong, you notice that there is something of a theme. Crises happen because he creates crises and then tries to claim credit for finding a quote unquote solution to those crises for which he deserves credit. And of course, we know how much he wants to claim credit and wants to dominate the news cycle. That's his whole purpose in life, it seems. It was when he was a real estate executive in the city on the rise, and it remained so when he became the subject of front page stories all the time, just because of his romantic jinx, or that's not quite the right way to describe them, but that's the way that the newspaper would, one particular newspaper, the New York Post, would cover them. And now that he's president, he just so desperately wants it, it's almost plaintive. Especially in this interview with the Times yesterday, how he wants what he calls a great story out of his newspaper about himself. It's the inconsistency of a narcissist who sees no logic except in his own gratification.
All right, and it was just announced about 2 minutes ago. Senator Cory Booker is running for president in 2020. Another Democrat. In the, I'm going to say the Coliseum floor, because it's going to be, by the time everybody's in, it's going to look like something that happened in the Roman Coliseum years ago.
Yep, it's much to be fought over. After all, the possibility of taking on a president who is so universally calumnified. I don't blame anyone for wanting to run against him. However, it's not necessarily very good for the Democratic Party in its role as the official opposition. And of course, it's probably not very good for any of their prospects of actually overturning the rule of Donald J. Trump. a divided set of efforts to unseat him could actually rebound. I mean, that's an old adage of politics, and it's in danger of being repeated here.
Well, then you had the head of Starbucks come in, and I was so upset at NPR. They did almost a 14-minute piece on his announcement that he might start a third party and run. And he was asked questions in the first 5 minutes about what he would do. The man said nothing. He just talked about how there's a need of a third party. Well, I think there's a lot of people that have agreed with that. But when you announce for president and you're asked what your policies are, you should have some sort of an answer to say to them. I mean, have not we learned from electing one businessman to listen to another multi-million-dollar businessman
with no particular platform in mind? Yeah, it's.
It's okay, Cory Booker announced this morning.
I mentioned that to him.
I know.
We've got people who do have clear platforms, some of them anyway. But Mr. Schultz of Starbucks is a case in point where there is no there, at least there isn't for the moment. He may feel the need to develop a set of policies fast if he wants to stay in the game with any kind of credibility. It's becoming a bit of a repeating habit throughout the political firmament for people to run for office and trying their damnedest to be as unspecific as possible, saying pretty much nothing about what they plan to do because they're so anxious not to get pinned down to something that they may have to vary from later.
And which brings me to my question.
You can't have it both ways, however.
Well, that brings me to my question. I was listening to the two of you. Do you think that if the... I'm not saying it could be, but do you think that if the press coverage were different... potentially we might have more information and not be in a position where a person has to not pin themselves down lest as they, once they've won the primary and have to run to the center because there are a bunch of other people out there who actually vote and who might have differing opinions.
Journalists have a main job to ask people what they mean when they say something.
Yes, but
it's one of the best questions ever. What do you mean by that?
I saw something really heartening.
It's so rarely being asked these days. At least not the answers are not being published. Perhaps there are no answers.
But that's the thing. There have been ways now. There are professionals who are paid vast amounts of money to teach you how to deflect a question and not answer it. And so, therefore, it's almost like a really canned dance,
Absolutely. Another aspect of the carnival. Yeah. Mr. President, will you? Have you? Do you intend to? All that kind of chorus, and the non-answering is all part of our version of the carnival now. Would different kind of journalism make a difference? I think it might. I think if we got off the carnival barking roundabouts and whirligigs, you might spend more time as a journalist. We might all, as journalists, spend more time just reflecting on what there is and doing these what used to be derided as think pieces, but those pieces that actually just do sift the evidence and don't rely on a gotcha type question and answer session with the main principal politician or leader of any kind that we're focusing on.
The people who have just come out just now to run for office. Instead of, I heard bits of that interview that Marshall was alluding to, and I just, it makes me want to weep. It makes me want to weep the same way that they interviewed some, pretty fancy person whose name I can't remember, who basically pronounced that the candidate for for the Democrats would just have to not be, would have to be a woman, not a white man.
Well, that certain logic will lead to that conclusion, absolutely.
Yeah, but where is someone who is saying, I look for the editor, but I look for the editor who is saying, maybe you don't want to say that way right this second.
Oh, well, yes. I mean, the quality of commentary
is poor.
abysmal, true. the depth of analysis that particular conclusion required is mind-boggling. But the mind gets boggled every day the moment you turn on cable news or turn to the web for the endless list of comments. I mean, I've long since given up expecting a high degree of logical analysis in what is called journalistic analysis these days.
So I heard something absolutely staggering this morning on a cable news network, and I wonder...
They are there to stagger us.
No, it was staggering in a really great way.
This is a good staggering?
This is why it was so staggering, actually. And I am wondering if this is the beginning of something or whether this is just a one-off. And, of course, in my optimistic... What if somebody really meant to do that? And basically, they were talking about Syria, and instead of having a panel, they actually had the a woman from NBC News, one of the reporters who's just a military analyst and whose beat is the State Department, and they were talking about, and she was talking about, actually now there are more troops in Syria than ever before because they're called the movers. So what will be very interesting is to see what the drawdown really is. But anyway, it was actual information. It was not...
From an informed source.
Who had also said, and we haven't had these numbers before because in the past, let's just say there's been a lack of transparency. It was so frighteningly... normal and informative that I was staggered, and it was so cool, and because
and
of the way
and helpful
and sounds. Helpful
yeah.
Because those are bits of info that I that I'd like to file in my brain just for the next time I hear somebody say something. It's like not it's not a big roadmap, but at least it's an actual it's some data. Yay. And what I the thing that gave me a bit of hope around it was the way that she was set up on a set in Washington, with because it was Morning Joe, so their logo was in the background, but I guess it sort of reminded me of just a regular broadcast news set, and I went,
sounds
wow.
Almost antiquated.
Almost antiquated, but it's...
I'm being deliberately ironic here.
I understand, but also being deliberately antiquated. It was, because like it or not, just as in music, there are basic things that you can do to get people to focus on you. We know those tricks. I don't pretend to know all of the tricks. I just know one or two. Marshall knows many. You know many. And it did seem as though... I shouldn't say tricks. Tricks of the trade. But it did seem as though there was this was a deliberate choice. And I have to say that against the, standing in front of 26,000, a wall of monitors, pointing, without any... or having a... My favorite is your description of the horseshoe panel. The table's so big that you can't get the bloody panel on the whole. It must be a director's nightmare. It was really striking.
We must be grateful for small mercies. And every time I see that someone has taken an editorial decision to not go down the panel stage, the shouting match. route and goes for something a little simpler and clearer and straightforward, the happier I am. Those moments do occur occasionally. It would be nice to think that maybe people, as we get towards the 2020 campaign, we'll look back ruefully, as we've been doing this morning, on what a terrible carnival the media were responsible for in the 2016 election, and maybe try the old fashioned, if you like, straightforward delivery of analysis and thoughtful reflection more often, and we might get one of those outcomes that you wish for and you sometimes see when people are offered a better product, they actually end up opting for it in preference to the conventional product. We may turn a corner with this.
How does one, what would you recommend if you A, ruled the world, and B, had a massive megaphone for covering these people entering the 2020 fray?
I do it in a kind of orderly fashion. I take them one at a time and give them all equal time, parcel it out judiciously, and take them step by step through actual policies, not the kind of interview that Mr. Schultz of Starbucks was subjected to. Or at least in the edited form, appeared to have been subjected to, which is just an allowance to just steam over the vagaries, and that you hold everybody to account in a way that is absolutely concerned with specifics of policy. What platform are you actually offering, Mr. or Ms. Candidate?
And, so I suppose that's a fantasy, right?
Well,
because of the, I'm really glad you pointed out edited form, and that's another thing. You know, as people can barely get their minds around sound. That you've basically been reduced to an edited bit of tape or.
Oh sure, yeah.
And this is what the entire story is being written off.
And we should. You know, we need to be honest with ourselves about all of this too. This is not just a sudden bolt of lightning in 2016.
No, this has been
years. This has been developing towards this outcome for decades now.
Yeah.
I think it's probably now it's 3 or 4 presidential election cycles ago. I was part of a survey that tried to get to the bottom of how much information was being conveyed in television interviews, and one of the dispiriting statistics to come out of that particular election campaign was that the average soundbite in political coverage at that time was 8 seconds long. Now that's the average, so I would presume that some little bits of political discourse were conducted in slices that were 3 or 4 seconds long. The editing practices that have grown up as we rush towards this form of infotainment and has landed us where we are now has been long in the making and very short attention span results are what come out of it.
Thank you. Who's that? We got some agreement there.
We've got media beat background.
He always agrees with me. He's one of those sensible cats.
We should bring him on with AM and FM. Thank you both very much for your reporting. David Tereshchuk, the media beat.
On behalf of both of us, thank you.